You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 18 December. We've got U.S. inflation data due this afternoon. Will it be released? I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Isaac Odendaal, Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. At local inflation, interest rates in 2026. Lots of green shoots for the first time in over a decade. I want to dig into that, and of course, not without risks. Chantal Marks, FNB Wealth and Investments, retail in 2025. A mixed bag. Clothing under pressure. Food, not doing much. Vehicles, surprisingly strong. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Isaac Odendaal. He's Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Isaac, always appreciate the time. Let's kick off with the inflation picture at sort of as we wind down 2025. And frankly, I mean, I think it's looking fairly good. We've got a new inflation target. We've got a little bit of leeway on either side of that 3% number. But we are sitting at nice and low inflation, and hopefully that holds going forward.
It's been a good year on the inflation front. And I think the outlook is also pretty good as well. We've seen the rand strengthen quite a bit during the course of this year. Oil price is low. But I think also importantly, kind of the sectors that are not linked directly to the exchange rate or to energy prices, you're also seeing pretty low inflation. I think ultimately what the Reserve Bank wants to see is all of us as South Africans kind of getting used to the idea of 3% inflation, because that ultimately then also changes our behavior. And how we think about prices, how businesses adjust prices, how we approach wage negotiations and so on. And that is ultimately how you get down to 3% on a more sustainable basis. So yeah, in the short term, if you look at inflation, it'll probably creep up over the next couple of months, but then it also reaches a base and then starts declining again. So it's a pretty muted outlook, and that is why the Reserve Bank was able to cut interest rates at its November meeting.
And that expectations is so very, very important. I saw a headline a week or two ago about a union being insulted by I think it was a 5.3% offer. This is perhaps the tough part of low inflation, as you say, is getting it into labor, into consumer, and our behavior around it.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, I mean, I think a couple of years ago, that initial offer to the union would have been 8 or 9 or 10%. Yeah, so we've already managed to bring those kind of sort of the anchor point around which we negotiate these things. That has already come down a lot and will continue to decline over time, because it'll take time for us to get used to the idea of lower inflation. We've always had pretty high inflation, which is why we did not experience that huge shock in 22, 23. Because for us, it was, you know, the fact that the petrol price goes up a lot, and, you know, that was pretty normal. Whereas in Europe and America, going from very steady inflation over many decades, suddenly you've got 7, 8, 9% inflation. For them, it was a huge psychological shock, and obviously had massive political ramifications across the board.
And I mean, to your point, it was 40-year highs. For us, it was, you know, I don't know, it was Tuesday in a sense. The risks, perhaps, is sort of those fuel, those administrated prices, which are sort of beyond the control. You know, fuel is rand and oil. Administrated is, you know, Eskom's going to come with their increases regardless.
Yeah, fuel prices will always be volatile. Mm. Nobody controls that. Similarly with food prices, depends on the weather. You can have good years, you can have bad years. The administered prices is the bigger problem, because, and it's ironic because obviously the government is the government's inflation target, but it's the public sector that has been the biggest culprit in not adhering to that inflation target. But it also becomes more difficult to justify an 8% increase when you know, the inflation target is 3%. So even there, I think it starts, you know, it starts filtering into the idea that, you know, the kind of price increases that companies want around 3%. It's never going to be 3% perfectly, but it needs to be at least in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
And hopefully on the case of Eskom specifically, I mean, I think hopefully within the next year or so, we'll be over the worst in terms of the big increases from their side, because obviously they're still trying to recoup costs from building Kusile and Medupi, and it's been a complete disaster. Mm-hmm. But I mean, once that's kind of their prices should increase much, much slowly.
If we then take, and look, we've had a 1.5% of interest rate cuts in the prime from 11.75, which was a terrifying, we're down at 10.25. Can we anticipate perhaps a few more cuts next year from our MPC?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, and again, it all depends on the international environment and depends on what happens with the Fed and the dollar and all that stuff. But yeah, I think the Reserve Bank's own inflation forecast and own inflation outlook, there's definitely room for more rate cuts. I think they'll proceed quite gradually because it is still a very uncertain environment, especially internationally. But there's room, you know, by the end of next year, we could definitely see another 2, maybe 3 25 points cuts from the Saab, if everything goes according to plan.
Then if we take it more broader and look at the economy, and we've had Moody's keep us unchanged, we got an upgrade from S&P, we're, you know, off the grey list. There is a lot of very small green shoots that are starting to come through. And of course, you know, international situation can change on a dime. But for our local economy, I almost get a sense that the forward look is perhaps better than it has been in maybe a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we've come off a very, very depressed period. It's always been a lost decade for our economy in terms of just crawling along at sub 1% growth. And now, you know, we've kind of broken through that 1% barrier. If you look at the latest GDP numbers, but also if you look at the kind of the consensus forecast for next year, you know, it should be above 1%. Now, 1%, you know, sort of 1.5% is not anything to get excited about.
Yeah.
In the international context. But again, you have to look at where we come from as a country, this period of very low growth, which was caused by, you know, huge political uncertainty, caused by persistent load shedding, by other infrastructure bottlenecks, caused by a fairly difficult international climate, COVID, all those kind of things. So I think if you look ahead, you know, we've sorted, it looks like, load shedding. We're in the process of fixing logistics. You know, you're starting to see private companies talk about, you know, their plans for operating train sets. And obviously, the political climate seems to be fairly stable. We've seen interest rate comes down. That's obviously been very, very high over most of the last decade. And then, yeah, to your point, you know, you're also starting to see ratings upgrades and international or financial markets being a lot more comfortable with the state of government finances. Obviously, for a long time, there was real concern around unsustainable debt levels.
Yeah.
And the market punishes you by, you know, raising the borrowing cost of the government, which in turn makes the debt levels unsustainable. So you're kind of stuck in a vicious cycle. But we are now breaking out of that cycle. You've seen the bond yields come down or the borrowing costs of the government come down quite sharply this year. And now you're sort of in virtuous cycle territory. But as that comes down, obviously it relieves pressure on government finances. And that in turn makes the market more optimistic. The ratings agencies are more optimistic. So yeah, I think we're kind of climbing our way out of this hole that we've been in for the last, at least the last decade.
Is our risks then for 2026 as a country more perhaps external? You know, and the easy one to put a pin into is the AI stock. Or is there, you know, some real internal risks we should worry about?
Yeah, if you're talking specifically about the kind of the market in South Africa, I think the risks, I would say for once, mostly international. Although on the domestic front, obviously we've had this massive rally in precious metals prices.
Yeah.
And so if you get a pullback there, it will clearly hurt the mining stocks. But I think if you look beyond that on the JSE, it's not as if, you know, anything looks particularly too expensive or stretched. And yes, internationally, I don't think you can say the same. I think internationally, there's been a lot of excitement around artificial intelligence. And if you're seeing signs that perhaps some of that optimism is misplaced, you could see a pullback in international markets. I think the big thing internationally really is going to be just the state of the US economy and how the Fed reads that. If you're starting off next year and the Fed says we are not cutting rates because, you know, we're worried about inflation or because we're not seeing any deterioration in the economy, you know, that's one set of outcomes. On the other hand, you know, they could look at the situation and say, we need to cut rates because there is a weakening in the labor market. Then obviously that filters potentially into a weaker dollar, perhaps more upside for the gold price. So in that sense, we're kind of all waiting for them to make up their minds about how to read the economy. And of course, all of that happens against the backdrop of Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chair, being replaced around May when his term expires. And then who does Trump put into the hot seat? And how does that individual take things forward? We know that Trump really, really wants quite aggressively lower interest rates in the US.
Yeah, I take your point. And does he get that? And that perhaps is a big one to watch. We leave it there, Isaac Odendaal, Old Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Always appreciate the insights. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Please note we recorded this interview before Mr. Price made the announcement around their European adventure, so we are, of course, unaware of it. I'm chatting with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, F&B Wealth and Investments. Chantal, always appreciate the insights. I want to go back to last year, 2024, a really, really good year for particularly our clothing retailers. I'm thinking of Mr. Price, almost 100% up, the Fashini Group. And we kind of fell into perhaps the trap of this was what it was going to be, because for clothing retailers, particularly Mr. Price, Fashini, Truers, 2025 has been a bit of a horror year.
Oh, absolutely. So I think what's really important is that we need to understand what happened last year to lead to very strong sales and earnings growth for these companies, probably with the exception of Truworths, but let's just bucket them together, right? We had the two-pot withdrawal system being introduced. We had our first set of interest rate cuts coming through towards year end, and it was anticipated as the year progressed. Sometimes consumers get quite excited by it. Mm-hmm. We had a pretty low base being 2023. And then we also had very favorable holidays in terms of the regular reporting. So it looked a little bit better, I think, optically than what it really was. And because of the two-pot withdrawals and the enthusiasm about upcoming rate cuts, we kind of had a high base to work off of. And coming into 2025, it became very apparent very quickly that that high base was going to result in a sequential decline in growth rates. And that's exactly what we saw coming through.
Are we then seeing some value in the space? You know, the Fashini Group folks are worried about the debt levels. True is we could maybe park aside, but Mr. Price, Pep, I mean, is now perhaps the time after a tough 2025?
Yeah, so I think that we've lapped that base. Perhaps the only thing that I didn't mention in the first answer was that the competitive environment has kind of changed for these guys. So a few years ago, when H&M and Cotton On and Zara entered our market, we were very concerned about international retailers and what it was going to mean for our local retailers. But they actually weathered that storm quite well. Mm. And I think it was because of the relative price points. But Shein and Temu, the price points cannot actually be explained. And I don't think that the regulator has really stepped in a meaningful way to prevent a level of price gouging, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it's going to play out over the long term, but for now, it is a factor. And it's unfortunately something that we do need to consider. So I think the base will help them. Continued lower interest rates will help them. Continued lower inflation should help them. But the competitive story remains an issue.
I take your point on that. Absolutely. I don't know how they do their price points, but they don't sell, actually, they probably do sell lounge suites. But that brings me to Lewis, which is the little stock that can. I had a good year trading on a 6 PE, an 11 or so times dividend yield. And I have finally, my resolution for 2026 is I'm finally going to buy Lewis because I'm tired of looking at it. It really is a brilliant operation.
Yes. So, I mean, it's very niche, right? They are selling furniture and they're selling beds, but they're doing it exceptionally effectively. And they are really in the main a credit retailer and a credit player. And what they've managed to do is be quite strict around who they actually give credit to, and then also include value addeds like insurance into that credit basket, which has really, I think, helped them, particularly on the top line. And because that credit book is healthy, they're not taking big write-offs on that book, and that is helping profitability as well. Obviously, your merchandise still has to be on point. It seems as if they've got that mix right. And yeah, I mean, I think that this is really one for the long term. I just wish it was a little bit more liquid, because I think that then you would see a meaningful re-rating in that share. But for a retail investor that's putting a few thousand rand in, it's definitely one that I think would be probably towards the top of my list.
Yeah, it's been in my list forever, and I've always just like, I'll wait for it to be cheap, and it's never cheap. Let's go to food retailers. And this was perhaps, I mean, the big story, it was actually 2024 story, which was Boxer coming to the market. But I look at the like a ShopRite, it's had a, you know, in terms of price performance, it's had a bit of a meh year. Pick American Pay still under a bit of pressure. Boxer doing fine. Spa, although maybe that the last set of results give a glimmer of hope. My concern here is that we all love the lower inflation environment, but doesn't that put a bit of a squeeze potentially on their margins? Because they can't push the prices up, but their other costs are going up. Their rents are going up. Their staff costs are going up.
Yeah, it is. But I think that they're managing it quite well. Well, let's just say it's a tale of different retailers, right? So if we take ShopRite, for example, which I think would be the highest quality in that space, they actually haven't been raising prices at all, but they've been able to improve volumes. And I think that that volume improvement really has made up for the pricing story. But obviously, if the volumes are going up and we're not really seeing economic growth, it means that they're gaining market share. Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, they could be gaining market share from the informal market, which I do think is happening. I know that there's a big push into rural areas in terms of footprint and into township economies in terms of footprint. So they are gaining market share from the informal sector, but they're probably also taking market share away from the other players. We've seen it play out for Pick and Pay in particular, and we've seen how very soft SPAR's growth rate has been. So I think it's a winner-takes-all scenario, probably not longer term because things change. I was thinking in my preparation for this interview about how long can ShopRite win? And the answer is quite long, but probably not forever. Something will change and something will shift, but I don't think that it is an immediate or even a medium-term concern. And against that backdrop, I don't understand why the share price has been so poor over the last year, particularly year to date. I think there's a good opportunity for an investor looking to get into the likes of a ShopRite.
And the two turnaround stories is Pick and Pay. We know that that's taking time. It's a slow process. Spar, we had the numbers from them. Did you see proper signs of turnaround there? There was some good stuff. I mean, Europe resolved to a degree. The SAP system is working, but operationally?
I mean, operationally, I think they're still struggling for momentum, but they were very distracted, right? Mm. They had this massive debt pile, a lot of it foreign currency debt, major issues in Switzerland, major issues in Poland, and at the same time trying to implement SAP at their KZN distribution center, completely derailed the entire logistics network. And I mean, that's distracting, right? You're not going to focus on sales growth and kind of marketing push when you are dealing with all of that. I think to a certain extent, they've addressed most of it. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually quite excited to see what they do over the next 6 to 12 months. And I think that that will probably give me comfort if they execute correctly, because now they don't have the distractions, right? So the excuse isn't there anymore.
A last sector is vehicle sales. And I got to say, for me, the surprise of 2020, actually, there's a lot of surprises in 2025. But one of them was strong vehicle sales. In some months, we were at sort of decade highs in a sense. And We Buy Cars came under pressure. I think people are buying Chinese. I remember we chatted around that earlier in the year. But I mean, little combined motor holdings just trucking along.
Yeah, I think that it's been a big surprise. And the thing is, I mean, if you delve into the NAMSA new vehicle sales data, you have very strong growth. And yes, to a certain extent, it's the new Chinese vehicles mm-hmm. stepping into the market. But you also have really strong growth coming through from some of the mainstay brands. The biggest vehicle seller in South Africa, or new vehicle seller in South Africa, is still Toyota. Mm-hmm. Second is Suzuki, which is a Japanese brand. And I think third is Ford or VW or the other way around. So these guys are also seeing new vehicle sales picking up. What's been so impressive about the vehicle retailers, though, is that they haven't disregarded the incumbents, but they've added on in terms of their offering. And they pivoted very quickly when they saw the demand was shifting. But anyway, my point around the incumbents also doing well is I think our fleet was just so old that you were getting to a point where people really had to start thinking about buying a new vehicle. And yeah, I mean, I think perhaps to the drag of We Buy Cars, mm-hmm. but I mean, they still grew sales.
Sure.
The demand for used vehicles was still there. It's just, it was so strong for new vehicles.
Yeah. You take your point on that. And they are growing or getting that market share, which is one of their core business metrics. Leave it there, Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the time. Please note, we recorded this interview before Mr. Price made the announcement around their European adventure. So we are, of course, unaware of it. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades. That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We hear every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobukle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Keelan and Gluvu, local REITs.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.